Support for Class Dismissed comes from School Status. School Status is the only K-12 data analytics platform designed to turn analysis into engagement. To learn more about how School Status can change your school district, head over to schoolstatus.com. You are listening to Class Dismissed, episode 42, and I'm your host, Nick Ortigo. Teachers are using one particular rock band's videos to teach science. Researchers ask kids to draw scientists, and the drawings are telling. And one company is breaking down the language barrier between parents and teachers. Stay with us. Class Dismissed is the podcast that inspires educators through story. Each week, we cover some of the hottest topics and news in the world of education. Plus, we speak with a guest with a bright idea for education that you can apply in your community. This week, we chat with educator and author Nick Ambrosino about his book, Coffee with Ray, which may just help you find that teaching spark when you need it most. Hello, everybody. Nick Ortigo here, and I'm joined by teacher extraordinaire Lissa Pruitt and education data expert Russ Davis of School Status. Lissa, how you doing?
I'm great.
Russ, how's it going over there?
Fantastic.
Are you guys going to cancel your Facebook page? Kind of seems to be the talk. Again, Lissa's like, what's going on?
I'm serious.
Blank stare.
I
wish you could have seen her face.
You get that RCA looking into the phonograph,
yeah.
Like head tilt look.
That is exactly what it looks like. That's funny.
Yeah. Well, Lissa, so if you hadn't heard that, apparently everyone's data, and Russ can probably more eloquently explain this, but everyone's data was shared, not everyone, about 50 million users' data was shared a few years ago and used in terms of politics. And Zuckerberg was on CNN last night apologizing and said, we got this wrong and we're going to let everybody know. And there's kind of this whole movement of, well, I'm canceling my Facebook page. So I think, Russ, you've already canceled yours or you've shut it down? Or
years ago.
Yeah, which I admire.
Wait, so like what data? Like my name? Duh, it's already out there.
What you like?
Well, no, they've got you. So the things that they collected, so here's what they did. So we've all seen these apps on Facebook that have like, take a personality quiz. Well, they did that. And the way that Facebook used to be set up, it would allow you not only to see the person that was taking the quiz, but they could see all their friends, what their friends liked, what their interests were, where they were located, what their names were, I don't know if it did email or not, but you could see a lot of information about that person's friends. So only like 240,000 people took the survey. But because of the way the network, everyone's interconnected, mm-hmm. It actually was able to obtain the information of 50 million people, and which is really interesting. I never take those surveys, but chances are a friend of mine at some point, I had a lot of friends on Facebook back then, did. And so now probably my information is out there. And my privacy settings when I had Facebook were pretty limited. So you really couldn't, unless they were a close friend of mine, you really couldn't see a lot about me. And kind of what was going on because, some things are meant for public consumption and some things are just for your friends.
Yeah.
Which is a value that seems to be lost in today's society.
If it weren't for work, I would cancel mine, but it's like I need it to manage pages and stuff.
A few years ago, I got off just because I didn't think it was a healthy thing. Like I'm spending a lot of time on Facebook and it started out with deleting the app from my phone. And then I was just using their Facebook website on my phone to browse because it was killing my battery.
I did the same thing.
I mean, like, I'm sorry, Russ. I'm just trying to figure out what you do on Facebook. You don't strike me. Like, what do you just cyber-stalk people?
He would get in political arguments with people.
Are you serious?
Oh,
were you that guy?
That guy.
Oh, my gosh. I love it.
It was so bad.
Because I'm always like, who does that? Who goes and just posts? Oh, it's Russ. Oh, got it.
I would spend a lot of time, kind of trying to change folks' minds, and you just can't do that, right?
Yeah.
It's not possible. The only way you can do it, it's not through Facebook, and the research shows, is to like look at people face-to-face and not talk about the issue, but talk about the things that are important to you and the shared values. So for instance, I have a pre-existing health condition. I have a heart condition that prevents me from getting insurance in the open marketplace, right? So whenever the Affordable Care Act came out, it was important to me because, it got rid of pre-existing conditions. And
right.
So it's more important to share that than it is to say, I support Obamacare,
right.
Which is like
right.
immediately turns people's brains off. But if you say it's important to me because I have a pre-existing health condition and it's the best option for pre-existing health conditions until something else comes along, that's a lot more disarming. So
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, anyhow.
That's a little more positive than the people that just get on there and trash.
No,
I'm always like,
it's a good point. It's a definitely good point. Well, Lissa, why don't you go ahead and kick us off with the teacher's lounge. What do you know?
Well, that question that every math and science teacher always hates, where they're like, the kids say, when are we going to use this? You know.
Right.
Well, OK Go, the music group, OK Go, has answered that question for some teachers. Definitely brought some spice.
This is the guys who did the famous treadmill video.
The treadmill video, yeah. I actually am a fan of their music, too, but mostly they're known. I mean, they're great musicians, right. But they are definite. I think they have more widely, worldly known because of their music videos. So the first one I ever saw was the treadmill video. That's where you have a lot of treadmills side by side, and the music band members are going in a synchronized dance, stepping from treadmill to treadmill, which I don't even want to know how many times.
Oh, yeah, it was so hard.
How many times they just busted it and went flying out. But anyway, so basically the teachers across the world have, you know, started using a lot of their videos. They have one that's like a Rube Goldberg machine. It's awesome. They have one that I've used personally that shows color mixing. And Sesame Street, I think, is involved in that one. So anyway, the band started noticing that the majority of their followers are, you know,
educators.
Young students and educators, wow. Right? And it's because the teachers are just trying to spice it up in the classroom by showing these music videos. So it all trickled into the music band OK Go creating OK Sandbox, which is a whole separate website,
wow.
OKSandbox.org. And I think it was based out of University of Minnesota that kind of started saying, let's make a toolkit basically for teachers to introduce some of these huge concepts in science and in math using these videos. And it just kind of is a resource for teachers to be able to log on, show the video, and have a lesson plan geared towards second graders that uses, I mean, honestly, I think it's This Too Shall Pass. That one is the one with the Rube Goldberg machine. At the very end, they get splattered with paint. And it's just the momentum as an adult, even just watching that 4-minute video, knowing, you know, the whole time they drop hints that they're going to end up getting splashed with paint. But it's
right.
Like, you're just like each turn you think, oh, here it is. Oh, this is it. And finally, at the end, it happens. But there's even parts in that video where they have the glasses with different levels of water, and it makes this thing spin, and these spoons hit the tops of the glasses of water, and it makes different sounds, of course, which is a science experiment, but it goes with the song. Like, it's like, dee, 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 it does the melody in the song. It's amazing.
So while it may not be used for, like, a whole lesson, it at least gets kids excited about what they're about to learn, probably.
Absolutely, and in that video alone, there's so many different concepts of, you know, motion and sound and math to where they could play just that segment and say, okay, this right here, this like the treadmill song, for example, that teaches rate in math, mm-hmm. You know. So, you know, you hate that stupid word problem where a biker gets on his bike and bikes 30 miles down the road at a rate of blah, blah, blah.
The train is leaving Cleveland.
Yes, and then at the same time, a train. Yeah, so it's like.
You guys sound like Ben Stein. Is it Ben Stein? No, Ben Stein. Is that who it is?
Yes, Ben Stein.
Yeah, anyone?
Anyone?
Bueller.
So anyway, the treadmill song, basically that video, is the same concept with rates, but it's so much more interesting. And it's like, oh, okay, I got it now. So you watch the videos. The good thing about the OK Go Sandbox is they have the band themselves have outtakes, and they're explaining the concept.
This
You're
is really
watching
cool
a video
that they like took this to the next level.
This is one thing that Lissa definitely has the inside track on. I had never seen the treadmill video from OK Go.
What? Really?
Never, ever. And I just saw it, and it's amazing.
It is.
Oh, yeah. It's so good. Then they do another one on, it was on a plane.
Zero gravity.
The zero gravity planes.
Yeah, I saw that one too.
Yeah, that one's really good.
Yeah.
That treadmill video is in the top 5 best videos of all time. It really is.
I think it has like 40 million views.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about music videos, not just like YouTube videos, but just like music videos in general. Like,
right.
It was so brilliant.
And I should say that there's some businesses that have gotten behind the band with creating of the videos. So like Morton Salt and
they're a sponsor
Farm
on the website.
Or Farm Bureau. I don't know. I might have said which.
Morton's on there.
One.
And Google is apparently sponsoring it.
Yeah, the Muppets are in one. So, I mean, there's a lot of companies that are like, hey, like, we like this. Like, you know. We're going to help you create stuff that inspires you know, it's just a perfect marriage of music and math and science.
Yeah, we don't really talk about science and math enough probably on this show. Like when I start to reflect on our guest, we haven't brought in a lot of math teachers. So I'm actually trying to get one on the show for a future episode, so stay tuned to that. Russ, you kind of have a science topic too to talk about, right?
I certainly do. So anybody that listens to the show, or if this is your first time, welcome. They know that I have a 2-year-old daughter. And so, you know, in our house, it's important to me that my daughter not be pigeonholed into doing any one thing. So, you know, if she wants to go be a scientist, she can go be a scientist. If she wants to be an astronaut, she can be an astronaut. If she wants to be a ballerina, she can be a ballerina, right? But I don't want any societal pressure deciding that for her, right? I want her to have a full slate of things that she could choose from. And so there was an article in Time just recently that they got published 2 days ago on the 20th. And it was talking about if you ask children to draw a scientist, what does that look like, right? And so the kind of the genesis of this is there was a study that started in 1966 and it went on to 1977. And a group of researchers gave 5,000 kids a simple instruction, draw a scientist. And what percentage of, actually, let's not do percentage, let's do raw numbers here. Out of 5,000 kids, how many of those kids do you think drew a woman, a female scientist?
Lissa, go ahead.
I bet very small number.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking back in the 60s.
I bet they all look like Albert Einstein.
Yeah, I imagine so. So I would say under 20.
It's 28. So okay. way less than 1%,
right.
Drew that. And so since those results were published, there was a new meta-analysis, a new study that came out. And so meta-analysis is when they go back and they look at a bunch of other studies and they use statistical methods and try to tease out new and different results. But they looked for studies that started in 1983 all the way to 2017 to look how the times have changed. So accounting for over 21,000 kids, what percentage do you think drew female scientists starting in 1985?
I don't know. I hate this.
I would say about 20%. I'd say we've seen some improvement.
28%, right? Okay. Which is amazing. That's a tremendous gain. And a lot of that's attributable to there are female scientists now, right? What was amazing to me is that girls are significantly more likely to draw females than boys, right? So 42% of girls depicted female scientists, while just 5% of boys depicted depicted females. So, you know, it's progress, but I think it still shows that there's a pretty big stereotype going on and a pretty big gap between perception, right? Like girls obviously now think that, you know, at least, you know, they can become a scientist, or at least that what a scientist looks like, right? Mm-hmm. That kind of idea in their heads is becoming more and more female. But still with little boys, that's not the case, right? Only 5% of them drew the same. So I guess it's really a question, you know, that we have to answer as a society is, you know, how do we change these things?
Well, I do think it's a lot of times, just from an art teacher perspective, a lot of times children are most comfortable drawing their own gender no matter what. So not that I'm saying that we haven't had growth in the area of females drawing a female idea of a scientist, but sometimes I do think children just are more comfortable drawing their own.
Let me challenge you
gender.
There, though. What if you had a classroom full of children, 50-50 boys and girls, and you said, draw a ballerina? How many of them do you think would be men?
None.
So,
right.
You know.
So, I get what you're saying. Is it's definitely a stereotype. I mean, that sure, you can flip it either way. There's, you know, females dominate the ballerina industry and males dominate the science industry, but maybe not as much. Obviously, there's not as big of a difference.
Right.
But so yeah, there's definitely a stereotype for sure. But I do think, you know, there's movies that have been out recently that highlight female scientists and show their roles in certain developments in history. And I think it's all going to get better. And obviously we're showing that we are getting better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it depends on teachers too. I mean, I know I say a lot, you know, in my classroom that, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, make sure, you know, it doesn't have to be pink, you know, just because it, not talking about the scientists, but whatever they're painting, you know, right. Sometimes girls come in and they're like, well, I have to have pink and purple. I've even had mothers walk in the door and say, you didn't use any of your favorite colors in this picture. Why? Why didn't you use pink? And I'm like, because they don't have to, you know, they don't to use pink. So anyway, so I can see where, you know, a lot of it is just the way we package it and deliver it to the children.
Yeah. I what I like about this study is it's so raw. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like the kids are such a good measure of how society is maybe looked at because they're so honest and young. And so, and I like that we're seeing an increase, you know, with the amount. But I mean, when you're talking science, there's zero reason a girl can't be a scientist.
Right. Like, I remember being little and seeing the female astronaut on the Challenger.
Right.
And I remember thinking to myself, she's a teacher and she's a lady going in space. Yeah. Like, I want to do that. I remember for a while saying I was going to go into space. Like, now the adultless, I would be so terrified to go into space. There's no way I'm brave enough. But I remember as a child. So I think it's really all about putting the role models out front and really highlighting them.
And Hollywood can play a part in that, I think.
Sure, and teachers can. Yeah. I mean, teachers can totally highlight, you know, a certain female in this area or that area. There's plenty of them out there.
Did you guys see the picture of Ann McCain, the NASA astronaut who took a picture recently and had her four-year-old son with her as well?
No.
I thought that was really cool. Like, she, you know, she took her official like NASA astronaut photo and she had her son in the picture with her. Mm-hmm. And it's a really cool picture. I'm sending it to you guys now.
Cool. Yeah.
It's a really cool picture, but it's, you know, she's holding an elephant and she's in her full NASA spacewalking outfit.
Yeah. And that's a great picture. And her son's holding the helmet in his lap. And that's really neat.
And I think it shows not just that a woman can be an astronaut, right? Which we knew.
A mother.
But it shows a mother, right? Yeah. A mother can still balance that work-life balance, which I think is very difficult. Like, societal pressures put a lot of pressure on women.
Right.
And I think sometimes it stifles their careers in order to be a mom and a successful woman is very, very tough sometimes.
Good.
I know the downward pressure is there. So, and then another thing I wanted to bring up also is the movie Hidden Figures.
Right.
Which, that good one. Field trip with a lot of schools.
Well, so it wasn't just women, it was women of color as well. You know, so I think that's really important. I think that, you know, popular culture really can do a good job in pushing this forward. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, shows like Modern Family, you know, have kind of changed our perceptions of what the family dynamic looks like in America. So,
yeah, well, good stuff. Really interesting. I'm going to put Russ on the spot here, and he doesn't know I'm doing this, but, you know, we're on episode 42, and I've never like plugged or really talked about school status in the teacher's lounge segment, but, and Russ may be mad at me, but Russ's company I saw is doing something that just like is newsworthy. Like, it blew my mind. And they have created this communication. They're not just a data company. They create a bridge for communication between parents and teachers. But they actually now are in the business of sending text messages and it all being archived. And you don't have to give up your phone number if you're a teacher to have this textable conversation with a parent. But on top of that, they have found a way to do it where you can break down language barriers and it actually translates the phone call. So if you have, say, a Hispanic parent and you text this parent through their app, it will translate that conversation.
That's
and I think
super
that's huge.
Helpful. Yeah.
I didn't know you were going to do this.
Yeah, no. He did not tell me. Yeah, I caught him off guard. But I just want people to realize that, like, you didn't tell me to do this. This is just awesome. So I've got to ask you about it.
Yeah. So one of the things that we found is that there's a lot of research that indicates that we do a lousy job of getting parents involved in schools, right? And that as we increase the ability to communicate, right, we have all these new amazing things like a piece of glass in our pocket with all the world's information, but people generally feel more and more disconnected from their child's school, right? And that's really important for a number of reasons that we fix that. And specifically for like new arrivals to the U.S. Or what we call ELL kids, like English language learners, typically their parents, while their children are learning English, their parents definitely aren't bilingual, right? They're struggling themselves. And there's a lot of research that shows that if you engage those parents if you attempt to engage them, even in their native tongue, even if it's kind of haphazard or the translation isn't perfect, they are way more likely to get engaged and stay engaged, which is pivotal for that child's development and for building a sense of community, which is really important. And so what we've done is we've been texting and calling for quite some time now. So through our app, it allows a parent or a teacher and a parent to send a text message to one another. And if there's a language barrier, we automatically detect that and we translate that for them using a variety of translation services. So if you send a text message to someone in English and they respond in Spanish, then it will automatically translate that on the screen in real time for you. So you can see what they said in Spanish. And when you respond back to them, it'll send it in Spanish. So it kind of breaks that communication barrier down. And for languages like Spanish, the most common languages, especially in the US that are spoken, obviously English is English, right? But Spanish, and then languages like Spanish, Mandarin, things like that, they're super accurate, right? Where they're using machine learning to get that right. And so the translation accuracy has finally just gotten there to where it may not be 100% grammatically correct,
right?
But both sides are going to understand what's going on. And we think it's important that we bring this technology down so that every teacher has that today.
Oh, two things. As a teacher, I think I'm a funny person. I'm usually pretty happy. So I love to share like funny things or, you know, just, I don't know, uplifting things, because I feel like there's, you know, sometimes the only time the parents hear from you is if there's a problem, you know.
That's right. There's a negative correlation.
It's hard though to just sit down and draft an email or whatever when you want to just say something funny, because that's usually in the form of a text. And so I think, number one, I would love that just
the texting alone.
Yeah, just to text and be like, oh my gosh, this is so funny. Look, this is what happened. Or, you know, so-and-so was such a good friend to someone else today. It was so awesome. You know, whatever. Boom. Just a text message. It has just more of a friendly feel, in my opinion. Whatever.
Yep.
So that's number one. Number two, I deal with quite a few language barriers. And it is uncomfortable for me as the teacher, because when you are trying to speak, of course, face-to-face, they usually rely on the child to translate. Like you said, the children are learning both languages at a higher rate. But also, when the child's not there, and you're just, you know, you just run into the parent, or they're in the classroom, and you're trying to communicate, you find yourself, as the educator, dumbing down the conversation, not because you don't feel like the person you're speaking to is smart. That's not it at all. You are at a loss for how to communicate what you're trying to communicate. So it's such an uncomfortable feeling, because you know that the person that you're speaking to is a bright, bright person, and you know you are too, and you're sitting there trying to communicate, and there's frustration on both parts for sure. And so I feel like this app would make what you're doing would make it so much easier.
It's exciting. It's something that we're working on, and we have a lot of new things coming out this year. And it's all part of a broader strategy that we're working on called Talk Like a Human, which is teaching folks how to speak to one another, because we don't know how to do that. Like it's if you're so used to saying negative things, sometimes you don't know how to say positive things or get your point across in a way that isn't confrontational or difficult for parents to understand. Like, education's the worst about like jargon and, you know, trying to use, analogous terms that people don't get. So anyway, it's a part of a broader strategy that we'll be talking about later. But thanks for bringing it up.
Look, I'm glad you're not mad at me.
I always feel like, you know, I'm bragging or whatever, but right. It's something I think that's transformational for a teacher in the classroom.
Yeah, you guys do a lot of stuff, but this one to me just like jumped off the page for me when I saw it in a Twitter post, and I was like, holy cow, like if I was a journalist still, I would be all over this story. Like, this is interesting. You're breaking down language barriers, right? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So anyhow, you guys ready for the bright idea?
Yep.
We are going to talk to a gentleman who has a very good selling book called Coffee with Ray and another book called Lessons with Matt. But it's all about, the character in the book. He is frustrated with teaching. He feels like he wants to change careers. And it's fictional, but it's a little truth in there. And he runs into this guy named Ray at a coffee shop, and it changes his outlook on everything. And I spoke to the author, and it's really interesting.
Cool.
Our guest in today's Bright Idea segment is a master motivator of students and very experienced in the field of human potential. Nick Ambrosino has 3 decades of teaching experience and is also the author of Coffee with Ray and Lessons with Matt, 2 books that can help an educator reignite that spark. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Nick.
You know, in the past several episodes of this show, we've talked about teacher burnout and how some teachers, there's a whole pool of teachers that seems to be dwindling, and we have a teacher shortage around the country. And what I really liked about your book, Coffee with Ray, is that your character almost seems to be at that tipping point kind of early on in the book. Is that correct?
100%.
Is that character, the character's name's Matt, for anybody who's not familiar with it, is he you in real life?
Everyone asks me that question, Nick. I think that all of us have Matt in us and all of us have Ray in us. So I think it speaks to really the two parts of who we are, that sort of pessimistic I've had with this job and then the optimistic, but I do it because I have a love and a mission. And so yes, Matt was me, still is me at times, I think. My wife and I used to have a sort of a signal when I first got married. How was your day, she'd say when I walked in the door. And I turned to her and I go, I think I'm going to open a pizzeria.
Right.
And that was a sign that it was really not a very good day.
Right.
And teaching. And then there are days that it's wonderful. So yeah, Matt, there is a definitely expression of part of who I am in Matt.
So in the book Coffee with Ray, Matt kind of stumbles across this circumstance with Ray at a coffee shop. And he has this moment where it kind of changes his perspective on everything. And without giving away the whole book, because we want people to read it, but kind of tell me, you know, what was the learning moment?
I think the big moment, because, you know, the books, I wrote that book about 4 years ago. So to me, there were a lot of moments that occurred throughout the book. I think the moment for Matt was really in the idea that when he finally came across speaking to Ray, Ray sort of spoke in the riddles of a Zen master in a lot of ways. He didn't give answers, he just gave ideas. And I think what it does is it sort of realigned him. One of the key principles that run my life, and that also you read through the book, is it's very easy, especially in today's world, to focus on the pain and what you don't want. And simply by readjusting, focusing on what you want, realigns the questions you ask yourself. And certainly we all know that if you ask better questions, you certainly come up with more effective and more accurate answers to get you to the path where you want to, the path that's most fulfilling for yourself.
You know, I imagine you had to do a lot of self-reflection in writing this book. And, you know, you kind of ask yourself, like, you know, what strategies do I need to use, or what can I teach other teachers to use to kind of get out of that rut, that feeling of, you know, I had a horrible day and I want to open a pizzeria. You know, mm-hmm. What do you tell other teachers?
The number one thing I speak with teachers about in my coaching practice is as teachers, we are givers. And what we do not really know how to do well is to refuel the contents of our emotional bank account. And we give to the kids all day long, and we come home when we're exhausted, and rightfully so, when we should be. I think a really effective teacher is one that is tired because they've given. But the second part of the equation that many of us miss is the ability to take care of yourself. You know, as a music teacher, we speak that music is both sound and silence. And a famous composer, I'm not exactly sure, I think it was Debussy, I'm not exactly sure, said that most of us don't know how to use the latter of those two in our music. And I think that's the same in life, especially in today's world where we're inundated by social media and we have Instagram accounts and Facebook and Twitter, and we don't have enough of silence. And I think in that silence comes the chance to recharge. And whether that means going to the gym, or going for a walk in the woods with your dog, or by yourself, or sitting, you know, on the porch with a glass of wine, we don't invest in ourselves enough. And I think we're experiencing, in a very, very difficult environment in the public school systems these days, and in education in general, we're experiencing such teacher burnout because we don't know how to take care of ourselves. And the simple fact is, and I hear this all the time again from the people I work with in my coaching practice, I don't have time to take care of myself.
That was actually my next question.
The demand's being put on me, and you're 100% right. And you know, it really goes back to what my original statement was yes, you can work from your circumstances of your life, which is, you're right, people will continue to demand from you more than you will ever be possible to give. And you have to draw the line in the sand, or I even say draw the line in the concrete, because the sand can be changed. But draw that line and say, no, this is me. This is my sanctuary. and this is my life, and I get to live it on the terms I want to live it on. I know as a high school teacher, once the kids find out that you're on their team, they will sit with you 24 hours a day. And I remember my lunch breaks being given up because kids were in my room. As a music teacher, kids tend to flock to your room, right?
Right.
And then I'd come into school earlier to get my work done. And the kids found out I was coming to school earlier, and they'd come in earlier with Mr. Ambrosino, or I was going leaving later. And it became to a point where I actually had to say to the kids, guys, listen, I love spending time with you. That's why I do what I do. But I also need to spend time with me so that I can be the best for you. And I think that's an important lesson for them to hear from those of us who are adults, sort of leading them through this thing they call their life.
You know, you had your success with Coffee with Ray, and you mentioned it was about 4 years ago, and then you went on to write Lessons with Matt, where the character continues into the next book. Why was it important for you to carry that story on?
I think there were, well, so someone once said, where Coffee with Ray paints with broad strokes, Lessons with Matt uses a much finer brush. And I think that's a pretty accurate description of what happens. So, there were a lot of unanswered questions in Coffee with Ray about really who Ray was. I needed Matt to really be empowered and become more of his own person. And I think at the end of Coffee with Ray, you know, he still held Ray in a sort of that Hollywood glamorous image and always looked up to him. And I think that's an appropriate thing for a new person who finds their inspiration to do. But eventually, you know, I always say to my students is that I really love being the source of your inspiration. But ultimately, you need to find that source within yourself. So there's a time for us to step back and empower them. And I think that the Lessons with Matt is really a chance for us to see. We get to see a little bit more of Ray's. Ray's not as pure as we would all consider him to be. And I think we'll find out a little bit more about that in the third book. And Matt is much stronger than we ever gave him credit for.
I know with a lot of your professional development and stuff, you kind of teach how to, and just from your experience in life in general, you teach how to motivate tweens and teens. And I think anybody who's not a millennial really feels that pain. Like, how do I motivate a millennial? And you're actively dealing with that. What's the key? What's the trick?
You know, it's interesting because everyone, sometimes I hear a lot of poo-poo about our millennials, and I don't necessarily agree with that at all. As a matter of fact, I don't agree with it for the most part because my kids are millennials. Mm-hmm. And they're not lazy, and they're not unmotivated. They are just looking at it from a completely different perspective. And I think it's a wonderful perspective because we've gotten as far as we are now in life looking at it our way. And I think it's time for someone to come with a new set of glasses. And I don't really feel it's my job to motivate them. What I feel it's my job is to teach them how to motivate themselves. And I think those tools are universal regardless of the generation we're speaking about.
So tell me a story about a time where maybe you managed to watch a teen motivate themselves, be self-motivated.
Yeah, so it's not just a matter of me of watching the team. So while I say that, a lot of people think that means I'm sitting back on my laurels waiting for them to learn to motivate themselves. I don't think that's true at all. I think what the real important thing is we need to give them the strategies for doing so. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, as you'll learn with Coffee with Ray, is we're all born with a wonderful GPS in our system. And it's usually pretty on the money for guiding us. It's called our feelings. So when I motivate my kids, even at 6 years old or 7 years old, I start that internal motivational process or teaching them how to listen to that way early in their learning. Because it's certainly too late to say, hey, you have to lift a 300-pound weight now, and we haven't trained for it. And it's really, really important, and it's a life-altering decision because you're going to choose where you're going to go to college and what you want to study. And if you haven't built that muscle up over the years, at 17 years old, that's an immobilizing thought to have. So some of the process I'll use is when a kid practices, says, how do you know when you're done practicing? How do you know when you're done learning? And most of the answers are, well, when I did my assignment. So when I practiced for 15 minutes, my mom and dad said. I'm like, well, that's one way, but there's a better way. You know you're done learning this when you feel proud of what you did.
Right.
You need to be proud of what you're doing, meaning when you're sitting in front of me, you know that you worked a little hard. You didn't work till you got frustrated. And you didn't work because you were bored because you got it right away. But you challenge yourself. And that's even part of the process of my seven-year-olds. I'll say, so does this look like, you know, I use the Three Little Bears as one of my go-tos for them. Does this work for the week look too hard for you, too easy, or just right? And just right means you'll have to put a little time in, and the reward for that is you're going to feel proud of what you did and what you've accomplished. And so that's the guiding light. So when they come to a lesson with me, it's never, did you practice? Because any intelligent child's going to say yes.
Right.
It's always, what did you do this week that you felt proud of?
It's a great question.
And I think, yeah, and I think it really, and those, I call them diamond distinctions in Coffee with Ray. Those little changes in how you approach things refocus the magnifying glass in a way that allows the child to go, hey, this isn't about me pleasing Mr. Ambrosino. It's about me being proud of what I do. And the weeks they go, no, I didn't do anything, I'm like, well, how does that feel? Well, it doesn't feel really good. Okay, so you don't like that feeling? No. So then next week, what do you need to do so you create a feeling that feels better for you?
You just said something while you were going through that, and you talked about working till you're frustrated. And I know you distinguish that, you know, frustration can be the number one learning killer. Kind of elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, I really believe that. I've written a blog about that on my website. I call it the F-bomb of learning, right? And it's in the book as well. And I think that frustration is an inevitable part of learning. So since we really can't teach someone to avoid it, and I speak to you I always tell my students, I do not speak to you theoretically about this. I speak to my students in great detail about it. Because when I was a kid, I was a very, you know, I was a pretty quick learner. And usually we find, especially on the piano or learning an instrument, you might conceptually understand something right away, but you still have to do repetition to get your hands and your muscles to learn how to do it, replicate it consistently. And for really smart learners, repetition is the bane of their existence. I knew what it was like to be frustrated, because in a minute, my books would be flying across the room and the binders were broken in most of my books as a kid. And I don't say that ever proudly at all, but I say it to them because I think often kids look at us as adults and go, they don't know what I'm experiencing, because they just, music came naturally to them, or math came naturally to them. That's why they're teachers. And I don't think that's true at all. I think if it came naturally to you, you're probably a scientist, not a teacher. I think it's our job, and I won't be the spoiler, because you'll pick up the book to check it out, but I think it's our job to teach them the tools on how to manage that frustration. I don't think it's our job just to go, you shouldn't be frustrated. I don't think it's fair to them. For me, the conversation is, listen, you will experience frustration as a part of your learning probably for the rest of your life, so it's probably good to have a set of tools by which you can navigate it so it doesn't become a roadblock to your success.
Right. Well, it sounds like you've got just this whole like collection, this wealth of ideas and knowledge and how to motivate students. If somebody wants to keep up with you, you mentioned you have a website, I guess. Is that a good place to start?
Yeah, that's a great place. If you sign, when you go to the website, there'll be a sign-up form for a report I have about just some tips and how to get the most out of your teaching and to be to release the stress as a teacher as well. You can sign up for that. It's Nick Ambrosino. That's NickAm, as in Michael, Brosino.com. So that's a great place to start. And then there's always Amazon if you want to check out the books.
Are you active on social media anywhere?
I am. There's a Facebook page for Nick Ambrosino. So it's Nick Ambrosino Author on my Facebook page. My kids would tell you that I should probably have an Instagram account, and I think I have one, but I don't. We don't use it in writing, learning Instagram and tweeting. I just, you know, for me, it was more about drawing that line in the sand and going, okay, this is way too much social media for me to keep up on. I'll commit to these two levels, and then the rest of my time is spent writing and teaching.
Are you ready for our pop quiz?
I'm ready for your pop quiz.
All right, let's do it. First question, if students could only go to school for one subject, which subject should it be?
How to learn.
So distinguish that.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of what I write about is I'm not really interested. It doesn't matter if you give me a math student or a science student or a music student. The one thing that is usually weak for them is how do I learn? You know, everyone wants to know, you know, often when I have a new teacher that I work with in my coaching practice, they ask, well, how do I teach? What's the best book to use? I don't know that. I don't know how to teach. What do you mean you don't know how to teach? You've been teaching for 30 years. Yeah, but I'm never interested in asking that question. I'm always interested in asking, how does my student learn? And knowing, you know, some students can sit there for 2 hours doing the same thing. Other students are good for 15 minutes or 20 minutes, and they need a break for 10 minutes. You know, some students need a fidget spinner in their hand in order to focus properly, and that's fine. There are teachers that go, no, you're not allowed to have a fidget spinner. I think if that's what makes this kid learn effectively, then let them have a fidget spinner. You know, so it's more about the how-to than the what-to.
what are we not teaching in school that we should be teaching?
See, question number one.
Right, exactly.
I learn.
I figured you were going to say that.
And I think the other thing is premium self-care. I think that's a really important. If I had to invent a course, it would be how to learn in premium self-care would be my course. There are some preschools right now that I've taken it out. Well, I have a student right now that came from a preschool in Wisconsin, in University of Wisconsin in Madison. And there's a wonderful preschool there that does, it teaches kids how to meditate and how to take a break. And I think that's all part of it. This is a go, go, go society. And that's not what's healthier for us as human beings. We're meant to contemplate. I mean, can you imagine if Plato or Aristotle never stood around and contemplated? They just kept going. We wouldn't have a lot of the theories and the philosophies we have today. And I think we're still capable of that, but not if we allow the static of the environment to continue to inundate our lives.
What does every child deserve?
Every child deserves the right to be understood and the right to learn in a manner that is most effective for them, not the most effective for our school systems.
What's the biggest challenge for today's educators?
They're overwhelmed. And it's not just our educators. You know, I just came out of a 7-day hospital stint, and I watched these nurses, these RNs. The floors are just incredibly. They're overworked. They're overwhelmed. And I see it with my friends who are still in the public school systems. They are absolutely exhausted from the demands that are being made on them. And I'm not saying those demands are incorrect. I just think that they're in the right place, but they're so almost they're counterproductive to educating kids, and those demands need to be moved aside. So I think really that our teachers are severely overwhelmed, and of course we all know that we all believe they're underpaid. But as long as it's a tax-based system where you're paying for your education, there's very little to be done about that.
What's the best gift to give an educator?
Time to themselves and their family.
Which teacher changed your life?
Two. One was my elementary school music teacher, because he was always a little bit of a goofball, but he could also be serious. His name was Myron Cohen. He's passed. I use a lot of his jokes and humor to keep my kids focused. And then my dad. My dad was my first piano teacher, and he was the model for why I became a teacher. My dad was a taskmaster with his students, but they all know that he loved them and that he would go out on a limb for them. And to this day, he still teaches a small voice studio out of his home in North Babylon on Long Island.
That's really cool. Have you ever been able to tell him that he's at the top of your list?
All the time.
Good.
All the time. He knows that in the book as well. So.
Good. Last question, pen or pencil?
Oh, fountain pen.
Fountain pen, that's a skilled art, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know if I consider it all. I just like writing with one.
Okay. Well, good stuff. Well, again, you can keep up with Nick at nickambrosino.com. The books are Coffee with Ray and Lessons with Matt. You can find them on Amazon. Nick, we really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us.
Nick, it was my pleasure. It was really delightful.
That's going to do it for this episode of Class Dismissed. We want to hear from you, so if you want to send us an idea or a comment, remember you can always email us at info@classdismissedpodcast.com. We're here to support educators, but we need your support as well. So if you like what you heard today, please be sure and hit that subscribe button, and we'd also love it if you'd leave us a 5-star review. Don't forget you can connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/classdismissedpodcast or on Twitter. Just search for us by typing in Class Dismiss. On behalf of Russ with School Status and Lissa representing all the teachers out there, I'm Nick Ortigo, and I'll talk with you next week.
Class Dismissed!